Bitch, is that better? Is bitch better? Is bitch better? Is bitch better?
Hey bitches, welcome back to another episode of Bitch is Better. I'm your host, Raven, and it's 2021, y'all. Happy New Year! I missed y'all so much over my little holiday break, but it was much needed, and your girl is back and bitchier than ever, just like I said. It may be a new year, but it's still a Monday, so y'all know what time it is. It's time to talk about our favorite dysfunctional relationships. But first, I gotta tell y'all about some things that I watched over my little break. Oh, and I know there's a lot of Bravo news, but I'm just gonna save that for Bravo Day, which is Friday. So yeah, here's what I watched. First, The Undoing. So I know I'm super late, but when I found out about the show, it was too late for me to like catch up with everyone else. So I was like, okay, I'll just watch it later. And oh my God, it was so good, y'all. It's kind of like a thriller or drama or something. I don't know. But you get to play Nancy Drew and like find out who the killer is. And it was really good. So if you're like me and late to the party, that's okay. But just make sure you watch it because it's really fucking good. So that's on HBO Max. And another really good show on HBO Max that I watched was The Flight Attendant. And it was insane, but I very much enjoyed it. So Kaylee Cuoco is the flight attendant, and she's like an alcoholic and wakes up in a hotel room with a dead guy, but she doesn't know what the fuck happened because she blacked out. So then she goes on this like crazy journey to figure out what happened and try and stay out of prison. It's wild. Also, Luke from Summer House had a small role in the show. That's not necessarily a reason to watch because it's just Luke after all, but fun fact. I also watched a reality show on HBO Max that's an HBO Max original, and it's called House of Ho, and it's about this Vietnamese family that lives in Houston, and they are loaded. They got so much money. And so you get to see a lot about their culture and their family dynamics, and it was just really good. I wanted more. Like, it wasn't enough. Like, I saw people comparing it to the Crazy Rich Asians movie, and that's what got my attention because I fucking love that movie. So yeah, watch that. I also watched the Heaven's Gate documentary on HBO Max because I love documentaries and cults. So if you're into that kind of thing, you should check it out. And I just like really watched a lot on HBO Max. They've got a lot of good shit over there if you haven't checked it out yet. And last but certainly not least, on Netflix, I watched Bridgerton. Y'all, when I say I am obsessed and in love, I mean it. If you follow me on Instagram, you already know this because I've been talking about it nonstop, and also the Duke of Hastings, and I even started doing a little daily Duke post, which will continue forever. You're welcome. But before I start talking about him, it's basically like Gossip Girl, but in the 1800s. And I won't lie, when I first saw it, I was like, no thanks, period pieces are not my jam. But then I watched the trailer and I realized they really were on some Gossip Girl shit. So I was in and I never looked back. And y'all, it is so good. The Duke of Hastings is unreasonably fine. So that's two really good reasons to watch it. Just trust me, have I ever steered you wrong? No. Watch Bridgerton. Okay, now it's time to take a journey into the most magical place on earth, Love After Lockup Land. Okay, so we'll start with Lindsay and Scott. So Lindsay has just, you know, gone snooping through all of Scott's shit and she found all this stuff. And so her mom comes over and she's looking all sad. And I'm just like, girl, you know, you are not sad about Scott being a sneaky bitch. Like, she may be upset about, you know, the fact that she chose him over some of her other pen pals and the fact that she may have been better off with one of those other ones. But all this moping around like she's heartbroken over the Scott thing is a joke. So Lindsay's mom brings over a bunch of stuff, and one of the things she brought was a book. This is the book that the quote came from. Remember the quote about scamming a man or something that Lindsay had written down in her little prison notebook, and Scott snooped through it and got all mad about it? Well, it came from this book. But, I mean, I think we all knew that Lindsay wouldn't be dumb enough to write down her master plan, like, to scam this idiot in a notebook or anywhere, for that matter. So anyway, Lindsay is like, yeah, I got you now, bitch. I'm throwing this book directly in your face and let's see what you have to say about it then. But then she talks about how she's conflicted because she's finally reunited, you know, with her daughter, and she's got her all set up in this great house with a room of her own. She's never had that before. And if she leaves Scott, then Miley Grace isn't going to have any of that anymore. And she knows she's not going to be able to give that to her on her own. At least not for a while. I won't say she's not capable of doing it. That's not fair, I guess. But yeah, I thought it was nice to see her thinking that way. Like, aside from the, like, scamming Scott of it all, she's not completely selfish because she's thinking of her daughter. So I was like, okay, Lindsay, how are you going to handle this one, babe? Like, what are you about to do? Then we see her flipping through the book. And she's calling Scott. So I was like, is she about to start reading the book to him? Like, no, you're supposed to throw it at him, remember? But that's not what she's doing. So Scott apparently just sent her a text saying that he doesn't want her friends coming by the house to see her. And the whole Tarabelle parking her camper in the driveway thing is canceled. Like, it's done. We're not doing that. So she's pissed. And in her confessional, she's like, Tarabelle is my girlfriend, and if Scott wants to fuck with someone, he better pick someone else. And I'm like, he doesn't know that's your girlfriend. Like, what are you talking about? Also, Scott, how much of a coward can you be? You send her a text while you're at work or with one of your prostitute friends saying this shit. Like, you're too scared to say it to her face, aren't you? I know you are. Like, I understand why he doesn't want this strange woman he doesn't know that's friends with his convict girlfriend living in his driveway. I totally get that, okay? It would be a no for me, too. But have the conversation in person, you coward. You live with her. Did you really think you were just going to send the text and that was it? Like, no follow-up conversations would happen later? Come on. Also, what does Scott even do for work? We literally do not know. He just, like, pretends to have money and that's why he's in all this debt now. Like, does he even have a job? It's unclear. Okay, let me get back on track. So as soon as Scott picks up the phone, she starts giving it to him. She was like, it's not my fault that you don't have any friends, but you got me living in the middle of nowhere. So you know what I have to say to your text? Suck it. That's that. And Scott's just like a bumbling idiot on the phone. Like when she's confronting him, he can't even like form a sentence. So then Lindsay just completely takes a turn for the worse. She's like, nope, it's cool. I got you. You push me, I push you back. Just know that. And so Lindsay's mom is still here, by the way. So she's hearing all of this. And Lindsay's like, mom, I am so over this shit. I'm completely over it. And her sweet, sweet mom is like, well, I got my truck. We can just pack up your stuff and go, you know. But no, Lindsay has got something else in mind. So she starts just throwing his shit outside. It's raining. She gets his laptop. She opens it up. She sets it on the truck. And I was like, okay, so we're going to ruin the laptop. Got it. She starts throwing his clothes out on the front yard. And then she starts taking pictures of it and videos of her out there with the stuff to send to him. And I'm just like, Lord, help. Scott, you done fucked up now. You done fucked up now and you don't even know it. Ugh. Okay, so then we've got Destiny and Sean, and we've got one day until Destiny's court date, and Sean is talking about how much money she's cost him so far. $45,000 and counting. He says he's broke and literally living paycheck to paycheck, and I would love to feel bad for him, but I just cannot do that. I already suggested he call the cops on her and report his credit card and car stolen because she stole them and ran off. And, you know, get her locked back up and bam, you don't have to worry about her showing up to court or losing your $50,000 in bond money anymore. You know, if he didn't want to do that, he could have at least just canceled his credit card. But no, he's out here letting this bitch ignore him and only call whenever she needs more money. And she's out here living it up, ordering large cheese pizza on his dime. So I don't know what to tell him. Also, I know this happened during my break, but I need to address this whole Sean calling the pizza place and them giving him the address to where the pizza was delivered just because he said his card was stolen. WeTV, if y'all don't get the fuck out of here with this fake ass scene, there is no way an employee gave out that information. There's just no fucking way. That had to be a producer on the other end of that phone call because that's just bullshit. You can't call a place and get that kind of information. So, story time. I had a stalker situation a few years ago, and I had gotten I was at work minding my business. I got 2 dozen long stem roses and a giant stuffed frog and y'all know how much I hate frogs. And a giant frog delivered to my job. And the note that came with it said, nothing but have a nice day. That's it. It wasn't signed or anything. It just said, have a nice day. And I was like, what in the Lifetime Movie Network type shit is this? So I knew it was from this stalker, but I didn't want to talk to him. So I called the flower place and I was like, hey, can you please tell me who sent these flowers? And they were like, no. And I was like, okay, but it's like kind of a scary situation going on. So can you just please help me out here? And they were like, no, we can't. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Thank you for nothing. Hopefully I don't end up dead. And I didn't say that, but I was definitely thinking it. So anyway, they wouldn't tell me because, you know, they can't. It's like policy or whatever. It's just like if you go to a hotel and you ask, like, what room is so-and-so in? Like, they can't tell you. It's just, you can't. So, I mean, come on. So, yeah, in conclusion, they can kiss my ass with that fake ass scene. That was ridiculous. Okay, so then Sean calls Kelly, his baby mama, and he's like, hey, I need to talk to you right now. And she's like, okay. So he rolls up on her while she's on her break, just like trying to enjoy some delicious tacos. And she's like, okay, what do you want? Because I'm kind of busy here. And he's like, I just want to talk to you about Destiny. And she was like, why would I want to talk about that bitch to you? Like, why would I do that? And Sean was like, well, Destiny took off. Like, while I was at work, she packed up all her stuff and left. And Kelly just started laughing right in his face. And it was hilarious. And he was like, I mean, she didn't leave. She just, like, left for a little while. I'm sure she'll be back. And Kelly was just laughing in his face again. And she was like, you really think that she's going to be back even after she took all of her stuff with her? And he was like, yeah. And she was laughing the whole time. And he was like, she has court, so I'm going to fly up there and talk to her and blah, blah, blah. And then Kelly says, you know, what we've all been saying this entire fucking time. She's like, Sean, are you stupid? The answer is yes. She's conning you. She's using you. Like, just get it through your thick skull, please. And Sean, no, he just completely ignores that. And he has the audacity to ask Kelly for $1,000 so that he can chase after Destiny because she's maxed out his credit cards. And Kelly was like, LOL, absolutely not. Are you out of your damn mind? You better get the fuck out my face with that bullshit. No. And then he does something that really pisses me off. He tries to pull the kid card. He's like, I have $50,000 on the line. And if I don't get it, then that's less money for the kids. And I'm like, less money for the kids? Is this real life? Did you think about the kids when you were letting this bitch spend $500 a day gambling? Did you think about the kids when you were dipping into your 401k so this bitch could gallivant around Vegas doing whatever she wanted? Did you think about the kids when you said you'd change your phone number so the mother of your 6 kids couldn't get in touch with you because that's what Destiny wanted? Don't act like you got the kids' best interest in mind now, bitch. Absolutely not. No, sir. So, you know, Sean knows that because he pulled the kid card, that would get Kelly. And she's like, okay, fine, I'll give you the $1,000, but I want $2,000 when you pay me back. And I'm not playing with you. And I was like, okay, girl, that's what I'm talking about. So he agreed, but I mean, I feel like she knows she's not going to see that money again. Like, it's just gone. Because she's like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever done, but I don't want you to lose $50,000 because that would devastate our whole family. So fine, take it, get away from me, good luck and Godspeed or whatever. And then he just leaves. It's just like, this is going to be a fucking mess. It's a mess. So then we see Puppy and Amber, and you know, I don't really care about them. So Puppy finally goes home. Yay. And then it gets sad because her mom tells her that she has to go on dialysis, and that sucks, obviously. But what's interesting is that when Amber got out of prison like a year ago, she went to stay with Puppy's mom, and that's where she's been living this whole time. But now that Puppy is out and at her own mother's house, they don't have a room set up for her. Like, imagine coming home from prison and your prison girlfriend has a room at your mother's house, but you don't. Like, something is wrong with this picture. Like, sorry, Amber, but I'm going to need my room back. Thank you for keeping it warm. Like, so the issue is Puppy's mom doesn't want them sharing a bed because she doesn't want them fucking in her house, I guess. And that's fair enough, I suppose. So yeah, Amber, I'm sorry, but you got to go. Like, you got to get on the couch or something. I don't know what to tell you. So then they go in the room and they're like cuddling in the bed, and Puppy's like, so what's up with us? And Amber was Amber was basically like, slow your roll. So it would appear that Puppy is more into Amber than Amber is into her, but we'll see. And that's it for them. Oh, God. Then we see Lacey and Shane and John again, because, you know, John is fresh out of jail and he's still on this mission to see what Lacey is up to. He knows that she's back with Shane, but he doesn't care. So he literally rolls up to her house and he's like sitting outside like a fucking creep. And he sends her this cryptic text talking about guess who's out. Side note, John, when he was typing this message, it was like it was his first time using a cell phone. He's typing one letter at a time with his finger. So that short message took a long time for him to type. Also, Lacey has him saved in her phone as Jailbird John, which was just so ridiculous. So anyway, Lacey sees the message and she's like, ugh, I can't deal with this shit. I'm pregnant. I'm trying to focus on my marriage. And John, I don't know how long he's sitting outside like a fucking weirdo, but he doesn't get a response. So he leaves, but he's like, she'll be back. She always comes back. And it's like, oh my God, like, let her go. She's bad for you. She called the cops on you, remember? And also you're bad for her. Like, this shit is toxic. Like, just leave it. So then Lacey tells her dad about John getting out and, you know, sending her text messages, and he's pissed. He is not here for the John bullshit. And he's scared that Lacey's going to fuck things up with Shane over all this John stuff. And he's like, you know, it's kind of shady that you didn't tell Shane about this. And I'm like, agreed. You should have told him. But she's not listening to her dad at all. You can see it all over her face. And she's just like, yeah, I mean, I know I need to protect my husband, but I'm just not going to tell him about John. I'm like, okay, cool. So you're just going to let him get into a fight with John, which is absolutely going to happen when, not if, when John shows up to their house again. And, you know, then he'll be violating his probation, getting locked back up, and you've got a new baby on the way. Like, yes, cool. That sounds like a solid plan, Lacey. Definitely do that. Idiot. Then we've seen Quaylon and Chevelle. And have y'all noticed that since Quaylon has been gone, Chevelle has been like doing her makeup and like putting on like real clothes more? It's like she got a little glow up or something. And the timing is strange, don't you think? Like, wouldn't she want to have been doing that like right when Quaylon got out? I don't know. Just a random observation. So Quaylon calls Chevelle with a blocked number because he is in high school. And when Chevelle answers, her daughter's like, is that daddy? And I'm like, oh my God, bitch, you still haven't told her to stop calling him daddy. Like, what is wrong with you? So they haven't spoken in 2 weeks, and Chevelle has an attitude, and she says she's not feeling Quaylon right now, but that's literally just because she just went on a weird date the other day with some random. And Quaylon is like, well, I want to fix things with Chevelle, but he's still talking to the Chi-Town bitch. What the fuck, Quaylon? You know, you don't want to fix things, because if you did, you'd tell the other bitch to fuck off and you would not be speaking to her. Like, stop it. So then he's like, I'm going to come there and talk to you and we can fix this. And she's like, no, you won't, because I'm not going to be here. And she's like, I'm going to be out of town. And now the wheels are turning in his head. And he's like, oh, you going to see somebody? You going to see somebody? And she was like, well, none of your fucking business. Goodbye. Then Myla was like, is daddy going to Branson with us? And Chevelle was like, no, your daddy is in Houston. And I'm like, dude, your daddy's not in Houston. Well, maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know who your daddy is. But Quaylon is not your daddy. Chevelle, you need to fucking tell her that, especially if you are like done with him. That's what makes me think she's not, like, she's absolutely going to go back, because you'd be like, no, he's not your daddy. We don't know him. We don't talk to him. Like, no, he's done. Oh, whatever. So then we've got Brittany and Marcelino, and y'all know how I feel about this. Honestly, it's not even Brittany and Marcelino this season. It's literally Brittany and her mom. And the whole thing is just way too dark for me. You know, so they go to therapy and it's not going well. So yeah, that's all I have to say about that. All right. And that's it for Love After Lockup. Let's move on to 90 Day Fiancé. We're going to start off with my favorite couple, Brandon and Julia. Okay, so Just a quick note about something that happened in last week's episode. My first issue is, why is Brandon's room way better than Julia's? You got her coming all the way over here to the middle of fucking nowhere. You know y'all can't share a room, and you give her the weird spare room with all the random junk in it? No. Bitch, you stay in there, and you let her stay in the nice room with all the new stuff. What the fuck is wrong with you, Brandon? And another thing. Brandon and his weird-ass parents expecting Julia to just start working on this fucking farm, like, the moment she arrives. What is wrong with these people? Seriously, I need to know. Because I would not, I repeat, would not be working on that farm. Especially since no one, looking at you, Brandon, mentioned it beforehand. She just shows up and they're like, yep, here's your farm work. Like, no, this is ridiculous. And keeping those crickets in the kitchen where the food is? Disgusting. Okay, so that's all I have to say about last week's episode. So Brandon says that Julia snuck into his room the night before so they could fuck because, of course, you know, they can't share a room, so of course she did. Anyway, Brandon has to get back to work, and his parents also have day jobs, so Julia's literally just going to be all by herself on the farm all day long. Bless her heart. And she's better than me because she said Brandon's mom told her she needs to work on the farm. And she's like, but I still don't know what to do because she just fucking got there yesterday. So she goes outside anyway and she's like, I do remember her telling me to get the eggs. Now let's pull over and park it here for a second. Brandon and both his parents work full-time jobs, and now they're forcing this poor girl to work the farm, whatever that fucking means, just because she so happens to be there now. Who would have been getting the eggs and doing all this other farm stuff if Julia wasn't there? Like, do they do it before they go to work, on their lunch break, after work? When does this work get done? Because they're acting like Julia is a new hire or something to, like, work the farm, and that's not the case. They have the other lady there to help, so why are they acting like, oh, thank God Julia's here, so now she can do everything? No. What is happening? I have so many questions. So then the family friend, Aspen, comes to show Julia, like, what to do. And she's like, yeah, you got to be up and ready to feed the animals at 7 a.m. And Julia's like, okay, not into that, but okay. And honestly, Julia's doing a great job with this farm shit. She's being a great sport. Because if she has to do all this work on their family farm, the least they could do is let her share a room with her fucking fiance that she's going to marry within the next 90 days. Like, it's wild. So Julia's not feeling the farm, and she's ready to go. And I don't think she's going to last 90 days there. Either she and Brandon are going to leave, or she's just going to leave by herself and go home. Like, I'm calling it. So Brandon finally gets home from work, and he goes straight to his room. Didn't pop his head in Julia's room to say hi or anything. Just went straight to his room. What kind of shit is that? You don't think that you need to greet your girl after, you know, her first day alone on this farm? No? Okay. So, you know, Julia just goes over to his room and she's like, hi. Yeah, I'm not dealing with the animals again. I hate it here. I'm not staying here. And I would like to go home. And he pretty much just dismisses her. And he's like, well, we gotta have dinner with my parents. And I was just like, really, again? Y'all are always doing shit with the parents and you also live with them. Like, always. It's weird. Do the parents not want to, like, spend some time alone together either? It's fucking weird. Let Julia and Brandon have their time alone, and y'all have some time alone. It's simple. So they go to dinner with Julia's parents, and Brandon's grandfather is there. And while Julia's trying to, like, talk about the day that she just had on the farm, Brandon's mom is like, oh, Julia, what is that on your neck? And yeah, it's, like, bite marks and, like, hickeys or whatever from Brandon, and I just want to know, what was the point of pointing that out in front of everyone, or even at all? Seriously, this woman has real issues that need to be sorted out. Like, your son is a grown man, and he has sex. Get the fuck over it. What a normal person would do is notice that, and then later, when you get home, you talk to your husband about it and be like, did you see the marks on Julia's neck? Like, I guess they're sneaking around anyways, because, yeah, obviously. It's fucking weird. So then the grandpa is like, hey, stop embarrassing him. And I'm like, yeah, stop embarrassing him and yourselves. And they're like, no, he needs to grow up. he needs to grow up, says the parents who were overly involved in their son's life, trying to control his life and won't let him share a room with his soon-to-be wife. Got it. Yes, he definitely needs to grow up. I wonder why he hasn't done that yet. So they have their wedding date picked out, and it happens to fall on Mother's Day weekend. And Brandon's parents are like, oh, no, absolutely not. Like, Mother's Day is not a good date for that. And Julia's like, well, the 9th is when Brandon first sent me the message saying that, you know, I'm going to be his future wife or whatever. So that's why I want to get married on the 9th. And they're like, no, that's just not going to work. And Brandon's dad, like, looks at his wife and he's like, no, like, you don't want to share your day with their wedding anniversary. Sir, what are you talking about? Mother's Day isn't her day. Her day is, like, her birthday. And so what if their wedding anniversary is on Mother's Day or Mother's Day weekend or whatever? Like, I realize you are terrified of losing your son to this woman or whatever weird attachment issues you have, but you need to let that shit go and you need to grow up. Brandon can still wish you a happy Mother's Day, even if it's his wedding anniversary, you freak. My God, these people, I can't. And imagine my surprise when Brandon finally stood up to his parents. He was like, no, if Julia wants to get married on that day, then that's what we're doing. I don't care about Mother's Day. I want her to be happy. And I was like, yes, Brandon, that's what I'm talking about. Finally, stand up for your lady. And so Grandpa was like, okay. And he, like, starts putting the date in his phone. And the parents were like, nope, don't write that down yet. We're still working on it. No, we are not doing anything. We are not the ones getting married. Brandon and Julia are, and they said that the date is May 9th, so that's what the fucking date is. Deal with it. So, I just know this isn't gonna turn out well, so we'll see. Then we have Stephanie and Ryan. So we met Stephanie last week while I was on my break, and we've got another cougar, shocker. Okay, no, but what actually was shocking is the fact that she said she had a secret she's keeping from Ryan. And I was like, of course, they always have a secret on 90 Day. But they always keep the secret until the end of the season. Well, not Stephanie. Baby came right out and said that her secret is she fucked Ryan's cousin. Oh my God. I was like, what? What? So apparently they got into a fight and then they broke up. And this bitch turned around and just fucked his cousin immediately. So now what you're not going to do is tell me that she didn't already, like, have her eye on the cousin, because she could have just met, like, a random tourist or someone there and fucked him instead. But no, she chose Ryan's cousin. I can't. I also find him to be more attractive than Ryan, but that's besides the point. It's just really fucked up, and I cannot wait to see how this plays out. So she says that she's going to go to Belize as soon as the borders open up, and that's when they're going to do their formal proposal, like, with the ring and everything. And it's going to be with the ring that her mother used to wear, which is really nice that she wants to wear it, but it's weird that she has to, like, basically orchestrate her whole proposal. Like, how does this work? She's going to get there and be like, okay, here you go, babe. Like, here's the ring. And he's going to be like, okay, thank you. It's going down tomorrow. Are you ready? Like, I don't know. It's weird. So, you know, her family is concerned, and rightfully so, because Stephanie, unlike most people on the shows, like, she has real money. And she literally said that she never, ever wanted to be married. And all of a sudden, she's like, yes, I'm going to marry this 25-year-old from Belize that I met when I was on vacation. Like, it's very strange, okay? So she says that before COVID, she helped Ryan financially, but now she's helping him and his entire family. So she's paying for rent, food, and whatever else. And it's costing her anywhere from $500 to $1,300 a month. And I was unclear on whether that was the amount she was giving Ryan when it was just for him, or if that was for him and the family. But either way, it's insane. What's more insane is the fact that she's basically paying his wages. So her cousin was like, why are you giving him all this money? He has a job at a resort, right? And Stephanie was like, yeah, but the reason he got the job was because I convinced my friend who owns a resort there to hire him, but I am actually paying his wages, not the resort. What? This is like the craziest shit I've ever fucking heard. And so he doesn't know about this whole arrangement. He thinks he's got this job on his own. He's like making his own money, but he's not. Like, he probably doesn't even do any fucking work. I don't know. This is so stupid. So poor Ryan. Now she's keeping two big secrets from him, and he cannot be happy about either one of them. And I cannot wait for her to share them with him. But either way, Stephanie is getting scammed in a major way, but, like, you know, live your bliss, babe. Good luck to you. Then we have Yara and Jovi. And let me tell you something. Jovi can kiss my entire ass. The way he was treating Yara and, like, letting the door slam in her face and all that shit because he was mad that she didn't like his furniture. No fucking sir. No. But he did give me a good laugh this episode when Yara was putting down the new white rug and she was like, don't wear your shoes in the house anymore because the white rug, and we don't want to get it dirty, and also it's just gross. You walk around outside where people pee in the street and it's nasty, so take your shoes off. And he was like, no one pees in the street in New Orleans. And I said, LOL. Like, he was joking, right? Like, he had to be. I have seen people pee in the street in New Orleans, and I'm willing to bet that Jovi himself has peed on the fucking street. So, yeah, Yara, she's not going to stay in New Orleans. She hates it there. She literally called it a nasty village. And I don't, like, I just don't know why Jovi, like, the first place he would take her would be Bourbon Street. You know what I mean? Because it is dirty. But whatever. And Jovi doesn't want to leave New Orleans. So, yeah, this relationship is not working out unless Jovi moves them to LA so Yara can be best friends with Kim and Kylie. And I don't see that happening. So, yeah. Also, Jovi is just a fucking idiot. So he buys, I have nothing nice to say about him, y'all. I'm sorry if you like Jovi. So he buys Yara a new phone because he's about to leave to go to work for a month. And, you know, she's upset about it. But that's not why he's an idiot. He's an idiot because he's like, yeah, you know, whenever a girl is mad or something, just buy her something. They expect it. And I'm like, no, they just, like, expect you, you know, to not be a fucking moron and apologize when you do dumb shit and then don't do the same dumb shit again. So stupid. Oh, I guess I really can't stand him. So they're going to go have dinner, and the conversation about kids comes up, and Yara is not into the idea of having a baby with Jovi right now and having him, you know, be home for a month and then be gone for a month with work because she wants help. And she says also there's another reason, and it's because when she was pregnant before and she lost the baby, she had to have surgery and Jovi didn't stay with her through it. Which really sucks. And as she's explaining this to him, you know, as a reason why she's not comfortable with having kids, like, he's literally sitting there, like, straight face, cold as hell, no emotion, no empathy, like, no nothing. And he was just like, sorry, I don't know what you want me to do. And I was just like, wow, I hate him even more now. Like, Yara, get out of there. Do not marry this man. Take your ass back to Ukraine because Jovi is a real piece of shit. Oh, God. Then we have Natalie and Mike. And for some reason, they are shooting off firecrackers. I don't know why. Then Mike goes to work and Natalie is left at home all alone. And she tries to do laundry and she almost destroys everything because she doesn't know what bleach is. She thought it was fabric softener. She was going to put it in there, but she didn't. Thank God. She just gave up. And it's like, oh, my God, she was going to ruin everything. That was going to be fucking terrible. So then Natalie calls her friend and she's basically telling her that she's not really feeling Mike anymore and that he's different from the Mike that she met, because when she met him, you know, he was fun. And now that she is here with him, he is not fun. And, you know, if that's how she feels, that's fine, but they shouldn't get married. But I also feel like he's super annoyed with her. You can see it all over his face and just, like, how he deals with her. And it's like he's trying to get over everything, but it's tough for him too, because when he was in Kiev, she wouldn't say that she loved him. And that's when she ended up giving the ring back. And you know what? She seems to forget that part of the story, especially when she cries about not having her ring. Like, bitch, that's your fault. You gave it to him. So stop it. Then we find out that Mike works a lot and he has like an insane 3-hour commute to work every day. So Natalie's home all day, just like cleaning the house and shit. And she's over it like after just a week. And I mean, yeah, I would be too, but whatever. So Mike is finally taking Natalie to this waterfall that she's been bugging him about. So he gets them a hotel and they go to dinner, but Natalie can't even enjoy herself because she's thinking about how different they are. So she's a vegetarian. She doesn't drink and she is super religious. Mike is drinking wine. He just ordered a tomahawk steak for dinner and he is an atheist. And I understand her concern completely. But at the same time, she knew all of this already. Like, none of this is new information, and none of these things changed before she decided to come to the States. So I don't know. And she's just being super annoying. She's like, oh, your meat is coming soon. An animal gave its life to, you know, for you to be able to have dinner. And then when he gets his food and he starts eating, she's like, ew, gross. And like making faces and stuff. I'm like, girl, if you don't shut the fuck up, like that's just so rude and childish. You know? And she's like, so are you like 100% meat eater? And like trying to convert a man that is eating a tomahawk steak into a vegetarian. Girl, if you don't want to eat the meat, that's cool. But why the fuck does it matter if he does? He's not trying to make you eat meat. How does that affect your relationship? Like, you have much bigger fish to fry. Like, trust. So, you know, Mike is being a good sport, though, and he agrees to do her little eat 1 week of meat, 1 week of vegetables challenge anyway. And I'm like, whatever. So the next day they go to see the waterfall and they're having a good time. And then they go to get some food and Natalie starts up with her bullshit. She's like, oh, you bring me to a bar and you had wine last night and beer today and you're eating meat again. And he's like, yes, I am. And I was like, good for you, Mike. Stand your ground, because it's ridiculous. Like, you're not going to tell me what I can eat or drink. Like, that's just stupid. So then she's like, well, let's talk about the wedding. And Mike was like, no, I don't want to because I can't really see that happening right now. And I was like, well, there's that. Then they have the root beer incident, which is another annoying thing. I don't like her. So Mike orders a root beer float for her to try because she's never had one and she likes it. But then she's concerned that there's beer in there because it's root beer. And she stops, you know, drinking it, even though Mike has told her there's no beer in there. And it's just beyond annoying. And I just cannot with her. And that's it for them. Thank God. Then we see Tariq and Hazel. And Hazel's finally in the States. And Tariq wants to take her out for an American breakfast. And he orders half the menu. And he tells her that he has all this shit planned for them to do today, even though she just got there last night. And he's like, we're going to go look at wedding venues and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, why do they do this? I know the Americans are always excited for like their significant others to be there. But come on, like, can you give them a minute to adjust? Like, I'm sure she's still tired. She's not thinking about the wedding anyway. Like, Hazel wants to find a new girlfriend. She wants to see what the women look like in Virginia Beach, okay? So anyway, she says that she wants to get married in a church because she's really religious, but Tariq is not. So he's like, well, I just want to show you this spiritual center. So just look at it and then we can talk about it later and see what you think. And she's like, okay, fine. So he takes her to his not church place that's called the ARE, and it seems kind of cultish to me. It's a bit odd, but maybe it's just because I've never heard of anything like it before, and I still have Heaven's Gate on the brain. I don't know. But I feel bad for Tariq because he's really excited to show Hazel this place that he's, you know, been going to for years and years, but she was pretty fucking clear that she wants to get married in a church. So I don't know what he was expecting to happen here, to be honest with you. So yeah, she's like, no, I don't want to get married here. And that's that. Then we see Rebecca and Ziad, my least favorite, but I don't fucking care about. So she's not moving in with her daughter and her fiance again. And I was like, okay, good. This was a good call. In her new apartment, it looks really cool. I actually really like it. And apparently she used to live in this building with her ex, and she thinks that this is going to be an issue. But it's not like it's a house that they bought together or like the exact same apartment that they lived in before or anything. So I don't see the problem. I don't even see why she needs to tell him, but like, whatever, girl. So it's during her segment that I'm back on my like, why is this fucking show 2 hours long shit? Like, seriously, there's so much bullshit that could be cut out. Like, it's just completely unnecessary. Then we see Ziad at the airport and his friends and family are seeing him off. And, you know, it's sad, but like, that's literally it. And I just don't know why they are dragging this shit out like this, but it's very annoying. Like, they didn't have to be in this episode at all. We didn't see anything from them. Like, why? Let me edit the show. Let me edit the show, TLC, and let me just see what I can come up with, and then we can talk. That's it for today, y'all. I'll be back on Friday to talk Bravo. And I think that's going to be the new official Bravo day. Don't quote me, but it's like, since there's something on Bravo Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, and then starting next month, Summer House is going to be on Thursday. So yeah, Friday will equal Bravo Day. So yeah, make sure you go to patreon.com/bitchesbetter to support the podcast, get you some bonus content. I'm currently rewatching and recapping Married to Medicine over there, so get into it. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter @mainlybravo, and I will talk to y'all Friday. Love y'all. Bye.